Welcome to At a Crossroads with a Naked Podcaster, where we bear it all emotionally and spiritually. This podcast is designed to support and uplift you as a Christian. I'm your host, Jen Taylor from momof18.com. Each week on the podcast, I'll bring you an inspiring message to support you in designing and creating a vibrant, fulfilling life. Before we dive in, please visit all of the links in the communities as this is a live broadcast. Feel free to ask questions I can answer during the podcast. At Crossroads with the Naked Podcasters for Christians who know that there is more to life and that our true, authentic souls are built for greatness. You are built with strength and love that is meant to shine through during times of conflict and celebration. Welcome. I can't wait to bear it all with you. In my business as a coach for Christian women, I help them to step into who they are meant to be and be inspired by their purpose and God-given gifts. Follow the links to sign up for my free training on how you as a Christian can begin to design the life that's meant for you. Reach out to me at any time on momof18.com. Hello, welcome to At a Crossroads. I'm Jen, your host, and I'm here with Travis Hall. Travis, how are you?
Jen, I'm great. I'm excited to be here with you. I've been looking forward to this.
Me too. Our friend Michelle connected us. How do you know Michelle?
Met Michelle through another mutual friend, Daryl Stinson. And so we met and connected, and we just absolutely think the world of Michelle and everything she's doing.
Yeah, I love her. She's so great. It's one of those things like when you really connect and meet somebody that you already love, then anybody that they send you, you get excited about. So I've been thrilled about this.
Yeah, love her. Love her heart, love her spirit.
Your website is called cultivatemypurpose.com. I want to jump in, really dig in to, there's a lot there, podcast, book, blog, your wife and five kids. Tell us all about it.
Okay. Well, you know, I really feel like part of what I'm called and created to do is help people discover their purpose. And if you put it all together, really the overarching vision is helping people restore the joy to their life and leadership. That's really what I want to do, whether it's through the podcast where we tackle issues that typically are obstacles that keep us from experiencing a joy-filled journey in our life, our relationships, our marriage, our career, our calling, whatever it is. We want to eliminate those obstacles. And we really believe that there is a paradigm of living, there is a paradigm of leading that you can actually enjoy. Jen, I mean, there's a lot of conversation today about grind culture and hustle. And the problem is I'm seeing a lot of people tired. I'm seeing a lot of people frustrated. People are becoming disillusioned. It feels like publicly everyone's pretending like it's okay. But behind closed doors, when I'm having conversations, man, people are tired. Their marriages are falling apart. Their relationships with their kids are disintegrating. And they're really thinking about tapping out and quitting. So whether it's the podcast or the book, Seven Deadly Thoughts, or my website, really, it's all designed to do the same thing. I want to equip leaders and I want to equip people to discover their purpose. I want them to discover their identity. I want them to live from a place of rest, knowing who they are. Who they are in Christ is very important to me. And I think there's a better way. I think there's better paradigms of living and leading than what we've often been handed.
Amen. Holy cow. Yeah, no kidding. You know what I think is so interesting is how high the rate of depression and anxiety is. And here's another thought I want to throw out there, because as a pastor, you're a pastor of your own church.
I am.
Right. I have this conversation with my husband. I love him. I love how different we are and how we're called to do different things, right? Which is a lot about what you're talking about with your purpose.
That's right.
I love. So we're called often or asked often to disciple, to share the gospel, right? Share God's word, bring people to Christ, which I think is super important. No, I'm not minimizing that at all. I feel called to disciple the disciples. So you bring these people in and they're there, and then what, like you high five and walk away. And I know that that's not what my husband is suggesting at all, or anyone's suggesting by discipling, but I'm always like, yeah, but what about the people that are really here and hurting? And although and I love if you could jump in and expand on this, but you can find every answer in scriptures. And I believe that's true also. However, going it alone is going it alone. It's really, really hard to do.
Yeah, it is. I think one of the, in fact, I was just with a group of leaders this week, about 35 leaders who are pastors and ministry leaders, and we were having this conversation. There's a couple of obstacles, I think, that stand in the way of us healing from old pain, of us hurting and navigating old pain. Number one is, I think leaders really struggle to invite people into our pain. We've really been taught, by and large, to keep people out of our pain. It's almost instinctive. Don't let people see that you hurt. And so some of the leadership culture in the world around us has sort of seeped its way into the local church, I think. And the world basically says, don't let people see your weaknesses. Don't let people see that you hurt. Don't let people see that you're a person. The problem with this is that it is impossible to heal alone. It is impossible to heal alone. We need to invite somebody into our pain. We need to have a relationship or build a relationship that can walk with us through this. Just somebody we can talk to and be honest about what we're feeling. If we don't, then here's what happens. We end up burying pain, and anything buried becomes a seed. If I bury pain, the seed of pain will produce a harvest of bitterness later. We usually tell ourselves at the beginning, it's okay, I'm going to be okay, I can manage this, I'm strong, I'm tough, I can handle this. The problem is that harvest, it bleeds over into every aspect of our life. And it's usually not until we're experiencing all of the negative consequences of this old unresolved pain that we realize something's off and we need to do something. And so I think we need to learn how to invite people in. I think that's one of the things that we need to learn how to do. The other thing I think we need to learn how to do, honestly, Jen, is normalize the idea that it's okay to have a therapist, and it's okay to have a counselor, and it's okay. I'm a pastor, and so I'm a proponent of walking with other believers through their pain. But I think sometimes the church has almost minimized the importance of therapists or counselors in our lives. I think that's dangerous. I think there are people that have been trained and equipped to really help people, in the words of Peter Scazzaro, go backwards and heal so they can go forwards and win. And that's probably the second toughest thing for a leader, because it's counterintuitive. I don't know about you, Jen, but I don't like going backwards. It's not within the realm of my my natural makeup. I just want to move forward, preferably at a rapid pace. The problem with that is, what's the first thing somebody tells you when you've had surgery or you've been injured? They tell you to go home and rest.
Right.
And oftentimes we use activity and busyness to numb pain that we've just never dealt with. And so to slow down, to go backwards and heal so we can go forwards and win feels counterintuitive. But until we do, we'll keep hitting the ceiling, that lid on our life that was put there by probably some old pain. We've just never navigated that. And so, yeah, I think we need people in our lives, and I think we need to have the courage to hit pause sometimes, go back, figure out what happened, where, navigate that pain. If we need to forgive somebody, forgive them. We need to release something, release it, but come to grips with that. I think if I can just share one last thing, having brokenness or having pain doesn't make you less valuable as a person. That's so important, because sometimes what we're taught is being broken is weakness and having brokenness is weakness. Listen, you are not like your refrigerator or your car, right? If your refrigerator is broken, then it must be less valuable. If your car is broken, it has less value. If I'm broken, I must have less value. No, that's not true. Our value and our worth was declared 2,000 years ago on a cross when Jesus said, "It is finished." He said, "This is what you're worth to me, and nothing you can do can change that." And so that's what I think. And that's what I think probably holds a lot of really gifted leaders back from making the impact they could make.
There's so many things that I want to say right now. One is it's called kintsugi. I'm not Japanese, so I'm sure my daughter speaks Japanese. She'll correct me on that. But it's the art of putting broken pottery pieces back together with gold. And it's the idea that you embrace your flaws and imperfections and you can create a stronger, more beautiful piece of art. And yes. I always think, well, that's us, right? Like if I have stretch marks from pregnancy, that's like, I want to put those on a poster on my wall because that's what my body did physically to bring these kids in. And a lot of people don't feel like that. And that's an exterior scar.
That's right.
But our interior scars are the same way. So I love that whole theory. There's also a saying that I really love, and it's, if you never heal from what hurt you, you'll bleed on people who didn't cut you.
Wow. Gold.
Right?
That's gold. That's absolutely true. Yeah. Yeah. Usually the people around us pay for the pain that somebody else inflicted on us. That's absolutely true. I think that's how we know we're healing. I honestly believe this. I believe Jesus taught us this. Okay. Jesus, after he rose from the dead, Thomas wasn't there to see it. And he's really upset. He's really angry. He's really hurt because as far as he's concerned, Jesus had been crucified. He's dead. And his dreams for the future died with him. And then Jesus shows up in a locked room. And the first thing Jesus does is show his wounds. Here's where I was wounded. Look, here's where I was wounded, but I got back up. I think one of the evidences that we're healing and have healed is we can actually show people our wounds. Because our instinct is to hide them. When I've healed from them, here's what I know. My wound can no longer hurt me. And I'm able to be vulnerable and transparent about my wounds. And there's something interesting, and I think you just touched on it earlier, is our willingness to be vulnerable about our pain and woundedness brings hope and life to so many other people. Because listen, just like Jesus, if you could be wounded, if you can get hurt, but you can get back up and heal, then so can I. If somebody has gone through a real painful, horrible divorce and they wonder if they could ever love again, but then they hear about somebody else who did, they see somebody else who did, they're like, wait a minute, life isn't over. I can love again too. When you've been fired from your dream job and you feel like, oh my goodness, it's over. I can never recover. And then you find out somebody did, someone else recovered. You know what? Then I can do that too. So right. I think there's great value in what you're saying. Don't hide them, highlight them, because I think pain can become your platform.
100%. So on the podcast, I have inadvertently attracted, I have no idea how it happened, but entrepreneurs, people that own their own business, run their own business, do their own thing. And in that, I realized in the first few months that 100% of entrepreneurs birthed their business as a direct result of their struggle. Yeah. And the goal is to make it faster, easier, and more supported for their clients to go through a similar type thing.
Right.
Because they got through it often alone or with the help from someone and they thought, wow, that's, I want to help people do that the way I was helped. So 100%, 100% of them did that. So absolutely. So tell me about your books. I've already bought it, but I haven't read it. So tell me about that. Tell me about your book.
Yeah. So I've had the privilege of working with some of the most gifted leaders and entrepreneurs, and they're just great people. And what I discovered is I kept meeting with these really, really gifted people, but they were just stuck and they didn't understand why. Mm-hmm. And when I would sit down and talk to them and just sort of walk them through this, I mean, it was so obvious, Jen, to me and everyone else around them. They're gifted, they're talented, they've got this skill set, they've got these God-given gifts, but they just are stuck and they don't know why. And I'll be honest, at first, I didn't know why. I'm like, why are they stuck? They're so gifted. But then when I began to dig into it, here's what I discovered. 100% of the time, their limitations were not external, not one time. Right. Their limitations were 100% internal. They were entertaining limiting beliefs or limiting mindsets about themselves, lies they've been told about themselves, either from people that they cared about or the culture had told them. Somewhere along the line, they picked up these ideas about themselves that weren't true. Now, as we started digging into these, it took me about 4.5 years to finish the project because I just kept talking to these people. And there were 7 reoccurring thoughts that people kept entertaining. Wow. It was just amazing to me. There was just this there's more than 7, but there were 7 that seemed to cover the gambit within my realm of influence and the conversations I was having. It was incredible. So I'm like, man. And when I watch people, Jen, get free from these thoughts, I watch their life. I watch them step into their purpose. I watch them step into their calling. I watch them step into their, what we would call destiny, because they shook loose those old limiting beliefs about themselves that just weren't true. So that's why I wrote the book, 7 Deadly Thoughts. Eliminate the thoughts that are limiting your life. And yeah, it's been a really great ride.
I love this so much. I'm so excited to read it. I'll even leave a review, which is shocking.
Oh, thank you.
See, anybody with a podcast or a book is like, please leave a review.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
I'm so excited about that. So limiting beliefs are something that I work with also, and I love, and I drive my family crazy. My 11-year-old daughter, she'll say that always happens. And then she'll look at me and she's like, I know, Mom, when did I decide that? Because anytime, this is how people can recognize a limiting decision in their life and jump in on how you do this. Anytime you say something that's absolute, and absolute is I can't, I won't, it never, it always, it's an absolute something you feel. I never do well on tests. I always get cut off when I drive. When did you decide that? Because it's a belief.
That's right.
At some point, somebody said, you didn't do very well on that test, Jennifer. And I decided I don't test well. And that became a belief about myself that in college, and that's an example of myself. It can be something that simple. In college, my professor was like, since when did you decide that you didn't test well? You test great. That's not the point. And I was like, what do you mean I test great? I've already decided from second grade that I don't test well. So anytime you say anything that's an absolute statement, you are showing that you have a limiting decision about yourself somewhere in there. It that's what it showcases. So
yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah. Yeah. And so anyway, yes, to all of your listeners and viewers, go buy the book. Listen, I really believe with all my heart that this it's chock full of great material that's going to really help you identify some of those limiting beliefs and get free from them.
I can't believe that there were 7 main ones. I'm really fascinated by that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really interesting. And I could personally, as I'm listening to them and navigating through them, I could see these own thoughts at times in my life, in my own life. I mean, I could see them in my own life that at different times I had to learn how to either get past or conquer or kind of rewire my thinking to your point. And begin to be intentional about my thought life. People think that, so anybody who's on Clubhouse knows that this conversation is all over the place. Like everybody's talking about limiting beliefs and limiting mindsets. It's a really very popular conversation. People would be shocked to know that God addressed this thousands of years ago, that this idea of limiting beliefs is actually in Scripture. And in great depth in Scripture, like the Bible goes into great depths about limiting beliefs. The Apostle Paul said, casting down limiting belief, these strongholds, these imaginations that hold our minds captive. And so, yeah, I'm pretty passionate about the book.
I love it. Tell me about the podcast, and then I want to kind of wrap up this portion on your 5 pillars.
So the podcast is called Transformational Truths with Pastor Travis, and the vision behind it is to eliminate the barriers that keep leaders from leading from a place of joy, from enjoying the journey of leadership. And so I tackle issues that I think a lot of people are facing, a lot of leaders are facing, and we try to keep it meaty and good, and it's not gimmicky at all. It's very, very, it's a lot of like what you're doing, Jen. It's very, let's tackle the real issues. And so that's what we do. We tackle anything from relationships to the most recent episode was wealth building. That's a conversation we need to have more of. We talk about your emotional health. We talk about vision. We talk about just the stuff that hangs us up and holds us back. And I think this was our 43rd episode, and really, really passionate about it, really excited about Transformational Truths and the potential there. So I really want to help people change the way they think about themselves, the way they think about God and their relationship with God and their relationships with others.
I love that so much. I also want to touch on something that you said earlier about, especially as a pastor, like being strong and getting through it. I remember listening to a talk from a pastor who said, you know, when my wife and I struggled in our marriage, I was the lead pastor. That it's really hard for you. You guys need to make sure that you find somebody to talk to because you're not inhuman.
Yeah, that's right. Part of that. So here's part of that is our own fault, Jen. I think for years, the church, we were handed a model of leadership that wasn't healthy, and I don't even think it was biblical. And here's what I mean by that. We were told that the pastor, the lead pastor, should always be Superman, and that whether it's he or his wife, Superman, Wonder Woman, whatever, and never let anyone know that you have a weakness. Never let anyone know that you hurt. Never let anyone know that you've been wounded. And I just think that's faulty. I just don't think we see that back again to Jesus. He himself said, look, I've been wounded. I've been hurt. So I just think people relate better to Clark Kent than to Superman. I think people actually appreciate the fact that you're human if you just be honest about it. But people in the pulpit struggle with the same stuff that the people in the pew do. Leaders, they bleed, and healers bleed, and healers feel pain. There was a study done in 2019, so obviously this is pre-COVID, and they said in that study, 7 out of 10 pastors reported dealing with depression.
Oh.
7 out of 10 pastors deal with depression. That was pre-COVID. COVID did a number on lead pastors that I think probably we don't understand. So for anyone out there that are believers or in church, pray for your pastors, support them, encourage them. I think the next 6 to 12 months are going to tell the real story about the emotional health of our pastors. COVID did so much to them. There was so much pressure on every side to make a right decision, whatever someone thought that was. Pastors could do no right in 2020. They could do no right through COVID. And so I think emotionally they're still suffering. They saw people they loved, cared for, prayed for, walk away from church, leave the church. In some cases, sadly, they saw them pass. And it was a very difficult season. But pastors bleed. Pastors struggle in their marriages. Pastors struggle with anxiety sometimes. Pastors struggle with depression. And yet they're expected to lead and lead well and lead strong. So pastors, like most, and people don't, I don't think people understand the pressure most pastors face, honestly. One study was done about 5 years ago, and they said pastoring a local church is one of, ranked in the top three most stressful jobs in the world.
Wow.
Yeah, because of all of the expectations. Now, some of them aren't fair, granted. Some of those expectations just aren't fair, because your pastor is not Jesus. Your pastor is called to point you to Jesus. It's a struggle. So pray for your pastors, support your pastors, love your pastors.
We pray for our pastor because we feel like as someone in your position, you're actually potentially under attack more.
Absolutely.
Because who's stopped, right? Like if you fall, how great is that to the adversary?
Absolutely.
So I think that's, it's like even more. We have your five pillars. We can save that. I feel like it'll come back later. Let's jump into your story.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So I grew up in Saginaw, Michigan. I had great parents. Mom and dad were great people. They weren't people of faith, though, when I was growing up. They didn't come to faith until I was probably about 10 years old. Before that, they were just, they were sort of the fun people, right? So my mom and dad, were the partiers in the group of friends. I just remember growing up, my parents always had parties at the house.
Okay.
Yeah. Always had parties at the house. And I was always a house full of people. And, that's how I remember. My dad was working for General Motors and he was a bartender, as well. And, I would just remember my dad, even as a kid, my dad taking me to the bar where he tended bar. And sitting at the bar drinking Shirley Temples, right, and eating the free popcorn. And then something happened when I was 14 years old. My brother, who I looked up to, oh, my goodness, I mean, I revere this guy. He was a bit of a hero to me. He served in the United States Navy. He had a house in Honolulu, Hawaii, where he was stationed. And he had just signed up for another, I think, 6 years at that time. So he had completed his 4 years, and he signed up for another six. And he flew on what was called a P-3. It was a submarine hunting, aircraft. And he was just doing routine training exercises one day. And his plane collided with another plane. It was bad weather. Two Navy planes collided in midair. The lives of, I think, 26 men were lost. No bodies were ever recovered. And my brother Randy was one of those. Now, I was 14. My parents came to faith about 4 years earlier. My faith at best was pretty shallow. I'd probably say that because of a lot of the stuff that I saw and was exposed to, I don't know if I was really sure about faith. And I went to church with my parents, but my relationship with Jesus was extremely, extraordinarily shallow at best. So when this happened, I went into a tailspin. I mean, I was angry. My brother was gone. I blamed God for it. I expected God to give me some answers. I never got those from him. So from the age of 14 to 18, I went on an absolute rampage, angry at God, angry at the, it wasn't that I didn't believe God existed. I did. I was angry because in my mind, it was his fault that my brother died. So just rampage, just went crazy. The wrong relationships, the wrong friendships, eventually that turned into drug use. And I started to reproduce this party lifestyle that I'd seen modeled for me when I was younger. And to the point where my friends and I, we started to sell a little bit of drugs on the side. Nothing big, but just a little bit. We would go to parties and sell. And one night we'd left a party and we were driving down the main Bay Road in Saginaw, Michigan, the main road in that city. And my friend, he forgot to turn his headlights on. I'll never forget. And a Saginaw Township police officer pulled us over because of our headlights. Well, we had a we had drugs in the car and we had a gun in the car, a loaded gun in the car. And I was sitting behind the passenger. He passed it back to me. I hid it in the back of the GMC Jimmy where we're driving. I tried to hide it and we all panicked. Well, of course, the police saw all of the movement in the car, made them nervous. So when they walked up, they asked us to step out. It took him about 2 minutes to find the drugs. And then about a minute later, he found the gun. So by this time, Jen, there are four police officers there. And when that officer yelled out, "There's a gun," everything changed. We were face down in the middle of the road, handcuffs on our back. They picked us up. They leaned us over the hood of that GMC Jimmy. And we all had guns to the back of our heads. I felt the officer's gun at the back of my head, pushing my cheek down on the hood of that car. And he said, "If you move, I'll blow your brains out." And I remember looking across the hood of that car at these other two. There's four of us and the other two guys on the other side. And I looked at them and I saw guns to the back of their heads. And it was like kind of looking at a mirror. And I remember in that moment wondering if this was the life that I really wanted. That was not the night that I walked away from that life. That was the night, though, that something began to break in me, that hard shell around my heart. Something began to break. You see, I had a mom and dad who never stopped praying for me. And I was, at this point, I was 18 years old. And I was, at this point, I dropped out of high school. I became a father when I was 17 years old. I'm a lawbreaker. I'm getting in trouble with the law constantly. And tonight I've got a gun pointed to the back of my head and, something started to happen. Something started to shift. About two months later, I was by myself. Everything in my life, Jen, had completely fallen apart. Everything. I'd lost my job. I'd lost the relationship that I was in at that time. I was back living at home with my parents. I'd lost the apartment that I had. And I'm by myself. I'm driving in my car, Jen, and I don't know how to explain it to people to help them to understand my experience. So I'm just going to explain my experience. So I'm driving by myself. There was no music on, but it was as if in that moment, God, in his infinite love for me, met me in my car. It was as if God said, "Okay, it's time." And in my car, I sensed God. I sensed his love. I sensed his presence in a way that was unique. I'd never experienced it before. And I knew in that moment, I had this incredible revelation. I even said it out loud. I said, "God, oh my goodness." I said, "God, if this is you, I can't go through life without it." Mm. And I drove home, pulled in my parents' driveway, walked into the backyard. The sun had set, the moon was out. I remember looking up and saying, "God, it's me, Travis. I know I told you I would never serve you. I would never talk to you or ever go to a church again. But if you'll take me back, I'm ready to surrender to you. I'll trust you." And he did. And it was incredible. I still didn't have any answers to why my brother died, but I had faith that God is good and that God works all things out for my good. So I surrendered my life to Christ that night. And then God, in his infinite wisdom, his incredible grace, he did something totally unexpected. He called me to ministry, me, which is funny. God has this great sense of humor, you know, and he's like, "Okay, I've got a plan." And he calls me to ministry. And it would be sometime later. Now, in that process, Jen, here's what began to happen. God began to put my life together in a matter of time. I got this. I got a good job. I didn't go right into ministry, but I got a great job and went back to school. And an interesting thing happened. My dad, during the time of grieving my brother, his loss, or it would be his son's loss, my dad, he worked for General Motors. And every break in the break room, he would use that opportunity to share his faith. People would say to my dad, Randy, how are you dealing with your brother's or your son's loss? And he'd say, well, let me tell you. And he would share Christ. And I think he said in a period of 3 months, he led 60 people to Christ in the break room of where he worked. One day he was sharing and the break was over and he got a tap on his shoulder. And the guy said, Randy, I heard you telling this other guy about Jesus. I'm curious, how do I start a relationship with Jesus? Well, the break was over. He says, oh my goodness, we've got to get back to work. But here, and he handed him this old school Billy Graham track, this old Billy Graham-like salvation track with a salvation prayer on it. And he comes back at lunch that same day and he says, Randy, I said the prayer on this paper you gave me. What do I do now? And he goes, oh my goodness. He said, go home and say that prayer with your family. The next day he came into work. He said, Randy, I said that prayer with my family. What do I do now? And he said, oh my goodness. He said, well, why don't you come to church with me Sunday? So he did. He came to church Sunday with his family. Several years later, I married that man's daughter.
Oh my gosh.
We've been married for 21 years. We have five incredible children. One of which is named Randall Derrick Hall, after my brother who had passed. And I need to tell somebody something, that God knows, he really knows how to take your broken pieces and make masterpieces. Mm-hmm. And today I'm here and I get to serve as the lead pastor of Life Church, an amazing church. I've gotten to the privilege to write a book, podcast, help leaders, help people. And that's my heart. And I've got my undergrad degree, my master's degree, and next year I'll be starting my doctorates. All from a kid who dropped out of high school, became a dad at 17, was getting high, selling drugs, looked like my life was going nowhere. And that's what Jesus did for me. And that's what Jesus can do for anybody.
Okay, I have so many questions. That was so great. I love being surprised. That was awesome. Okay, question. So you were a dad at 17 and married, and you were divorced at 18. So kind of take me through some of that and what your relationship is like with that child and that mom. And the other question I have is, there's four of you that were arrested. What happened to the other three?
Oh, okay. Great question. Okay. So that night, only one of us went to jail that night. There was one guy who took responsibility for all of it and he just, wow. You know, yeah, he went to jail that night. The other two guys, I don't know. I lost track of one of them. The other one is doing well. He's got a family. He still lives in Michigan. They're doing well. They've come to faith. And, every once in a while I check in on them. The guy who took responsibility for it all, he had a tougher road. He continued to make those destructive decisions, ended up going not to jail, but to prison for several years. But the good news is that even there, he found Christ. And today he lives in, I think he lives in San Antonio, and he's living for Christ. He's in church, and he's doing pretty well. My relationship with my son from my first marriage is amazing. It wasn't always that way, though. Goodness sakes, Jen, I was so young and I had no clue what I was doing. You know, I mean, I was so afraid that my son, whose name is Travis as well, I was so afraid that Travis would make my decisions, my bad decisions, that I parented from fear. And something I've discovered, anything you do from fear produces more fear. And is, in fact, fear is usually the root of control. The reason we try to control people we love is because we're afraid. Usually someone else was out of control, right? Usually if we're controlling, it's because someone in our life was out of control and we learn how to cope that way. In my case, I was the one out of control. And so here I am now. I put my faith in Jesus. Things are starting to swing upward, but I still didn't know how to parent well. And so a lot of fear-based parenting with Travis. I made a ton of mistakes, and our relationship wasn't good for a while. Now today, it's fantastic. He moved from Michigan down here to Atlanta. We have an incredible, best relationship we've ever had in our lives. That relationship has been totally restored, but I'm here to tell somebody it was not always like that. Yeah. And so for parents who might find themselves there, I just want to encourage you that God can and is able to restore those relationships, but just be patient.
Very patient. Yeah, 100%. 100%. I've had that same experience. I'm thrilled about that. And did you navigate that pretty well with his mom and that? I mean, you know, when you're 17, it's kind of going, I don't know many 17-year-olds that would be good parents anyway. You don't even have enough experience, but you did well as you could in that moment. You were, it was a year or two before you had your road to Damascus sort of. So he was pretty young when that started happening.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, he was, I mean, he was very young. I mean, he was just a baby when I was still living that other life.
Yeah.
Myself and his mom as well. We were just both in a bad place. Look, when you're 17, you're pretty selfish. You're very self-centered. I mean, you just want what you want, pretty prideful, pretty arrogant, not to mention all the pain we both carried into this relationship. Neither one of us knew what the heck we wanted. And it was just, you know, it was a real painful, it was painful for both of us. The relationship fell apart. It wasn't all my fault. It wasn't all her fault. We were just selfish kids who were making a whole bunch of bad decisions. And, so how did we navigate that? I actually ended up raising Travis. She ended up moving out of the state to another state. Again, kids, we're just kids, right? She's trying to figure out life. I'm trying to figure out life. And I ended up, raising Trav. Now, Trav has a relationship with his mom, a good relationship with his mom today. And we have a great relationship today. And I'm really thankful for that. But at the time, are you kidding me, Jen? It was messy. It was ugly. It was it was childish. It was petty. It was, and sitting here talking to you about it, it actually blows me away. Honestly, like just sitting here thinking about it. You and I having this conversation is reminding me of how far God's brought me.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. That's great to know. It gives people hope. And I mean, and how you worked on that time, healing, admitting the issues, working really hard, opening yourself up to Christ, like all of these things were contributing factors, right?
Absolutely. So, yeah.
That's a beautiful thing. I cannot believe, so I'm so excited about this. So your dad in his pain is fellowshipping people at work, fellowships this man who brings the gospel to his family. You're over here, a total train wreck.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm projecting, but total train wreck. Somewhere in that time where your dad's probably, I'm guessing, still fellowshipping 4 years after your brother dies, right?
Yeah.
You have your experience. Tell me about meeting your wife. This is so exciting.
Oh, yeah. That was incredible because she was in church and I had been gone from church. I'd been away from church. So all this time they're there and involved and getting involved. I mean, her father went on to become a pastor himself. So they're like, So they're super involved. And so I've been gone, you know, I've just been gone doing my thing. And then I come back to church and there she is. And honestly, we would talk from time to time, but there was no relationship there for a while. It was probably, let me think from the time I came back. It was probably 4 years down the road that we both started to realize that God was doing something there. And, you know, I always thought when I saw, I'm like, you know, she's cute, you know, but, you know, and let me tell you something though, God, when I think about Tina and our marriage, when I think about how I started, Jen, like, you know, had this train wreck in life, all these bad decisions, my first wife and I, all of these bad decisions. And I look at Tina and I'm like, wow. Like, how did God pull this off? How did he pull this off? Because I am convinced that God created us for each other. And it's just, it's incredible to me how amazing my marriage is. And here's what's hard for me to grasp, right? The grace of God. I did not deserve this. I mean, I made every bad decision you could probably make. And yet here she was. And so she was in church and we just started hanging out and talking. And it was sort of funny because we tell this story all the time. Like I was trying to find this Christian girl. I'm like, that's it. This time I'm going to do it right. You know, I'm going to find this believer who shares the same values as me. And I would talk to this one girl, and then I would call Tina and be like, yeah, I don't know about this one. She's just like, this is not the right one for me. And then I would talk to this other girl, you know, and then I would call Tina and be like, I don't know. I don't know about this girl. And the whole time Tina would tell me later, she was thinking like, what is he thinking? Like, I'm right here. Clearly I'm the right one, you know? And Tina was so humble, and she was so like patient, and she was so waiting on God's perfect timing to pull all this together. And then it was just this revelation moment. I'm like, oh my gosh, something's happening here with Tina, and something's happening in my heart with her. And I just came to her and talked to her. I'm like, there's something happening in my heart. There was something happening in her heart. And we just had this moment where we realized we liked each other, and we thought there might be more. And as time progressed, there was clearly more. We were deeply in love with each other. And I mean, 21 years down the road, not that it's been perfect. There's no such thing as perfect, a perfect marriage, but wow, it's been good. And my prayer for anybody that's going into a marriage is they would have what I've gotten to taste. Cause I genuinely feel blessed.
I second that. Not your marriage, mine, but
I got it.
You know, we don't want to start any rumors here. I can say about my marriage, I mean, and it hasn't always been good. A relationship hasn't always been good. Actually, that's probably part of what gave us the strength and the conviction moving forward, right? Is to have those struggles together and to grow closer.
Absolutely.
Through them and in them and with them and with each other. And so I feel like, yeah. Wow. It's so incredible. I want everybody to have this experience.
Absolutely. And to your point, I mean, Tina and I were just talking to our team this morning about this, and she brought this up actually, like God was doing things in our hearts when we got married, but I don't think most people realize that, you know, when you get married, you're falling in love with each other. And usually, you know, you've only been introduced to the best version of each other.
Yeah.
You probably know a little bit about each other's stuff, you know, pain or frustrations or insecurities a little bit. But we usually go into marriage wearing a mask. And then over a course of time, we start to take that doggone mask off. And because it's not really who we are. And right. It can take years to really go through that process of healing. And I wanted to share that because I don't want to paint this picture. That oh goodness, well, he finally found the right one, and you know, they went off into the sunset happily ever after. Well, we're happy, but listen to me, we have had to work through some real pain and brokenness that we hadn't had to face. I think we spent a few years of that early part of all of our marriages just trying to hide all of that, but the truth is we've all got some stuff we've got to work through.
Oh, amen to that for sure. And it doesn't end because we're layers, right? You were talking about limiting beliefs earlier.
Absolutely.
And you have pillars, and so you can address certain things, and that allows other things to come up for you to address. It's not it's not a one and done. You haven't arrived. There's only one perfect person.
That's right.
It's not me. So
that's right.
I can guarantee I'm overhauling. okay. So I'm trying to think. I want you to talk about you went and worked a job. You had a full-time job that was great.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you were called into full-time ministry. I know this from your bullet points. So I want you to take us through that experience. You're married now. You have at least one child. You have a full-time job with benefits to get called into full-time ministry. What was that like? And then take me through the church and the building and the new church and the...
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Oh, my goodness. So... we knew that there was this call for a ministry, and we didn't know when we were going to be able to answer it, you know, and I had a good job. I mean, I was in Saginaw. We were building a life, and it was a good paying job with, you know, I tell people all the time, I had the 401k, I had retirement, I had a pension, I had Blue Cross, Blue Shields. I tell people all the time, like, I know we're supposed to cling to the old rugged cross, but sometimes Blue Cross is nice to cling to.
Blue Cross in my life.
Yeah. And so I had all of that, and suddenly I get this call, and from at that time, sort of a regional overseer, And they said, hey, there's a church in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, and it needs a pastor. And your name came up. We really think you're that guy. At the time, my wife and I, we were doing youth ministry together, loved what we were doing, just serving in the local church. And it scared the crap out of me, Jen. Honestly, it scared. I mean, I thought, oh gosh, you know, I don't know. I mean, this is people's lives. I don't want to mess anyone up. I don't want to mess anyone's life up. And I had so much respect for pastors and that calling, what they do. And, I said, no, I turned them down a few times before finally God got through to me. And I took that step of faith. Now for the first year, we commuted because we only lived an hour away. So I'm like, no problem. I just kept working. And, 2-3 times a week, we would drive out to the church and meet with people and have services, et cetera. But man, we really felt after that year that we need to take a step of faith. And we're like, oh, this is killing us. We've got to decide, are we called? Aren't we called? What are we going to do? Are we really going to trust God and just say yes to this call and go all in? And Tina and I talked about it, and Tina didn't hesitate. And I knew in my heart what we needed to do. And I said, okay, I'm going to go on Monday and put in my 2 weeks notice. And I left this job to pastor a church that couldn't pay for my gas to get there. And I just knew that there's something about knowing that this is God's will for your life. I sensed this was God's will for my life. We sensed him calling us to take the step of faith. Some people, Jen, thought we were crazy. Yep. They even said it. They said, you're crazy. Like, what are you going to do? How are you going to provide for your family? If it was just you, that'd be one thing, but you've got kids. Like, this is crazy. And all I could tell them was, listen, I've heard God. I just know this is God's will for our life. We've got to do this. So we did. We left. We launched out. Within 2 weeks, here's what happened. One person approached us with a check for $5,000 and said, I don't know what you're getting ready to do, but God told me to give this to you and to tell you it'll get you started. Then another family approached us and said, hey, we've got a house for sale. We're not going to sell it. We want you to live in it for free. And within 2 weeks, I didn't just leave my job. We were moved to another city in the house, had been established, and God just supernaturally provided. It was incredible. We started with 14 people. And it's funny, isn't it? Like 14 people, when I was saying no, how much damage can you do, right? Like, but I was so afraid of, and I was so respected that. But listen, we started with 14 people and we just stayed faithful. And this is important. What I'm about to say is this is so important to me and I want people to hear me. Listen, I don't believe that Jesus gauges success the way we often do. And this is important because never once in the Bible do you hear Jesus say, well done, thou good and successful. He does, however, say, well done, thou good and faithful. I think the real question is what are we willing to do with what he gave us, with whatever God put in your hands? Are you stewarding that well? Are you giving that your best? I mean, that's it. And don't compare yourself to anyone else. Don't compare your career to someone else's career, your ministry to someone else's ministry, your marriage to someone else's marriage. Don't do that. Yep. Be faithful with whatever you have, because comparison will absolutely kill your joy. And so we did. We just went out there and we took a step of faith. And about 4 years later, it had grown. God had blessed it. There was about 119 people. We had standing room only, small, tiny storefront. In fact, we could only fit 85 chairs in there. And so we had 119 people. So people literally standing. And then God blessed us. We got a new building, a new facility. That was a miracle. The owner said, you're not going to have enough money. We need more money than that. I said, that's okay. If it's okay, I'm going to make an offer anyway. They ended up accepting the offer. They said that they sat down, they talked to the board, and they said, oh, we just feel like this church needs to be there. So got into a new building. It continued to grow in excess of over 350 people. I think our highest Sunday was like 417. And that was in a small town of about 25,000 people, mm-hmm. Or 50,000 if the students were home. If school was in session, it was a college town. And then a couple years later, we started a second campus. And then about a year after that, God called us to Metro Atlanta. And so we've been here for 4.5 years now, pastoring at Life Church. So that's been our journey. And it's always taken faith. God's always called us to make decisions based on faith, not our circumstances, not what we could see, but what we heard God say. And can I tell you something, Jen? All of these years of taking these steps of faith, I have never regretted it. Not one time. God's always been faithful.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Huh. Wow, we didn't see that. I mean, yes, but you know what? It's hard. It's scary. So you've taken us through a lot of things that, like, I imagine, like, uprooting your, well, starting to pastor, I get why you had reservation with that. Although you were commuting and you kept your job, so there wasn't that part of it wasn't present. But just like being in charge of other people's lives, right?
Yeah.
And then making that move, that's when it's like it gets real scary.
It gets real. That's right. It gets real.
Because you need to eat.
Got to eat. Yeah, that's kind of important. But there were times. There were times where people would just drop groceries off at the house. We didn't know how we were going to eat. People would say, man, I just felt like I needed to stop by. There was a period of time where I had to make a really strong stand in the church. There was somebody who was they weren't healthy, and they were causing a lot of division in the church, and they were trying to control the direction of the church, and it just wasn't going well. The problem, of course, was that they were the biggest givers in the church, and they made a point to remind me of that. And I finally just looked at them and said, hey, this isn't working out. And I think it's probably time for you to find somewhere else to worship. Because this is the direction that we're going to go. You don't agree with the direction. You don't like the direction, but this is where we're going to go. And they quickly reminded me of how much they give. And I knew that confronting this, it was very toxic in the church, very cancerous. It was hurting a lot of people. I knew by confronting it, Jen, it would mean that I would have to go to work outside of the church again. But I had to make a decision. And here's what I needed to, the decision I needed to make was, am I going to lead in this moment and do what's right for this church? Or am I going to let what they give determine what I do? Because if I do that, with all due respect, if I let what somebody gives determine how I lead and doing the right thing, then I'm just a spiritual prostitute in that moment.
Right.
Because you give and you want to influence my decisions. So we parted ways and I went to work. I went to work for, at that time, a failing furniture company, and I was the purchasing coordinator in the office. It was horrible. I wish I could tell you it was great. It wasn't. Now, God redeemed it. I learned things. I learned very valuable things through it, but it was a tough season of my life. Oh, my goodness, it was tough, and I was there for about a year. We didn't have medical insurance. Like I said, we left the job. We didn't have medical insurance for 7 years. That was tough. There were times where I remember traveling with our kids. One time, my daughter, it looked like she had some sort of, her eye was swollen, infection in her eye. My wife took her to an emergency, emergency care type of a thing. And I remember when she said, we don't have insurance, they turned her away. And I remember how they treated my wife. I remember how they treated my daughter. I remember how that felt. That stung. But in the end, she did get care. But I think all of those things shaped us. They shaped how we minister. It shaped how we lead. It shaped how we love people. And looking back, was it hard sometimes? Sure. But was it good? Yes, it was good. And we wouldn't be who we are today had we not walked through some of that fire.
You moved to Atlanta 4.5 years ago. A bigger church, bigger area. I mean, Metro Atlanta is big, so.
Right. Huge. Yeah. Yeah. Attendance wise, larger church, greater opportunity, I think, to reach more people here without beyond a shadow of any doubt. Demographically, the diversity in Metro Atlanta is incredible, and we love it. It's something that Tina and I are both very, very passionate about. Tons of opportunity. After living for the first 40 years of my life in Michigan, we moved to Metro Atlanta. And I tell people all the time, man, 40 years of living in Michigan, I never got used to the cold. So I feel like I've been set free. No, to all of my Michigan people, don't be mad at me. It's really been a great journey. And of course, pastoring at Life Church International, we pastored 3 years. Tina and I followed some great people that were here before us, but we're different. Our styles were extremely different. And so we knew that anytime you have different leaders with different styles, it doesn't matter if it's a church or a business or an organization, you're going to have some attrition. You're going to have some people that are just going to say, eh, I don't know. I kind of like the old way, right? So we knew that, but we were good with that. Right. But then COVID hit, right? So we were on the upswing of rebuilding, and then COVID hit. And so all of the new people we had reached, they did not have the opportunity to build relational roots at the church. So when COVID hit, we took a hit. We lost a lot of people. In fact, we were having this conversation this week with some pastors, and they're like, well, we're all in the same boat. Well, quite frankly, no, we weren't. We were all in the same storm, but we all had different size boats. And so we were in the boat of changing culture at a church and changing direction and doing a new thing when COVID hit. And we've had to face those challenges, and it hasn't been easy at times. I'll be honest with you. I've said this multiple times. 2020 was probably the hardest year of my life. And there were some doozies in there, right? But 2020, that was a tough year. What most people have overlooked the reality of what pastors and ministry leaders and staff members at local churches have had to face. Trying to learn how to do ministry when there's no blueprint for ministry. Mm-hmm. Trying to learn how to love and serve people. In the midst of that, there was a lot of racial tensions that showed up in 2020 that a lot of pastors were trying to navigate and serve people well and love on the church and facilitate healing and unity. And then, of course, for a lot of churches, especially churches who are privileged to experience diversity, you had to navigate that as well. So I tell people all the time, it was a challenging year. People would call me, Jen, and be like, hey, I heard you've got a diverse church. How do you get more diverse in your ministry? Can you help me? Well, in 2020, they stopped calling because there's a lot of people that just didn't want that anymore because of the tension and having to lead through that and making tough decisions. So 2020 was a tough year, but now we're in 2021.
Yay.
And yes, amen. Amen. Yay. And we're coming out swinging, and we're more determined and more excited about our direction and our vision and our opportunity than we've ever been before. But there have been some difficult moments, because what most people don't know about pastors and ministry leaders is they give their life to something that people will walk away from in a heartbeat. They love people, they invest in people, and then often can be brokenhearted because the people that they spend all this time investing in and loving will just absolutely walk away, sometimes quite frankly, over nothing at all. And, right. Something petty, over a minor offense. There's probably a lot of consumerism in the body of Christ that we need to address at some point. But anyway, they give their life to it, and they'll weep over people and, pray for people and weep over people as they go, but they've got to press on.
It's interesting. I mean, in the toughest year, you launched your podcast, you wrote I know the book came out in February, so that was technically 2021, but you wrote a book, launched a podcast, and developed the Leadership Institute for Core Development that will come out this fall. So in a super tough year, you've also accomplished a lot. I think I'd like to wrap up our time. You can choose. You have the Leadership Institute that's coming out this fall. So if you want to share something about that and who that will serve, and definitely the best way people can get in touch with you, and any parting words, that would be awesome.
Yeah. So really briefly, you just pointed to the fact that a lot of things were born in 2020, despite the pain. And I would just say to your listeners or your viewers, birthing is painful.
Yeah.
Anytime you give birth to new things, are going to be painful. And that's exactly what happened. The Leadership Institute is something I genuinely feel in this season is one of the most important things that we're doing, because it's designed to really help leaders develop the core of who they are. I often think, Jen, I think skills are important, but not most important. I think we've neglected the core of a leader. That is their spiritual health, their emotional health, their relational health, and their mindset. I think we can give leaders enough skills to get into a room, but if we don't equip them with what they need to stay in the room, they won't be there very long. So that's the vision behind the Leadership Institute for Core Development. I really have a vision to help leaders get healthy, 50,000 leaders by 2032. And so we've got a pretty aggressive vision that I'm super stoked about. And people can go find out more about that at cultivatemypurpose.com/LICD. That's the Leadership Institute for Core Development, LICD. And they can connect with us there. We have a pretty big vision there. You can find me at Life Church International, obviously, every Sunday. Yep. And if you want to just hit me up, I'll tell you, honestly, I'm very active on Instagram. Super active. I'm super active over there. Almost every day I'm over there on Instagram. Pastor Travis Hall, just hit me up over there. Would love to connect.
We have all your links. All the links that I have are in this description. People can find you everywhere. And if you hit the website up and you want to connect on YouTube to watch your streaming, that's at the bottom of your.
Oh, awesome. Fantastic.
Yeah. So people, every link should be there. And if it's not, it's definitely on your website. Travis, thank you so much for being here. It was truly an honor.
Oh, it was my honor to be here. Thank you for letting me be a guest. I love what you're doing.
Thanks.
For investing your time with me on At a Crossroads with the Naked Podcaster. I'm so glad that you joined our conversation. If you can take 2 minutes to share this episode with someone you think can benefit from it, or it would have a positive impact on their life, that would be amazing. Go to the podcast page to sign up for the free membership site where all guest links are available. This podcast is designed to help you in your struggles. So reach out and let me know what you enjoy or what you would like to see more of. It will support me on the journey of causing a worldwide epidemic of healing, gratitude, and joy. Until next time, remember you are not alone in your struggle. Reach out to me on any platform. I love to connect. You are worth it to me. Have an amazing day.